We're going to reflect on one of the many presentations that were made at the recent K-State Ranching Summit. This looked at grazing alternatives and factoring in the economics of the day and perhaps opportunities for cattle producers and crop producers to ally and partner up for the benefit of both. We'll get into that in more detail now. Joining us, the two who presented that information, agricultural economists at K-State, Michael Taylor and Dustin Pendle. Let's start on this strategic partnerships angle, Michael, if we might. First of all, you and Dustin both believe that the times economically are ripe for creating these kinds of partnerships, right?
Yes. So the situation that we're in, where the financial stress that's going on for a lot of crop producers and potentially is coming down the line for some of our cattle producers, is putting folks in a situation where, you know, they're trying to figure out ways to boost their bottom line, increase some revenues. And, you know, we've had a lot of specialization occurring over the last 20 years, where if you're a crop producer, you really just are producing crops, and cattle producers are specializing on that side, as opposed to having the kind of diversification that we used to have. So this is a way, by starting to talk about maybe how crop producers can rent out either their corn stalks or some cover crops for winter grazing to cattle producers, it diversifies their operation a little bit without having to make a direct investment in those cattle. So it gives them the opportunity to get some off-season revenue by working collaboratively with their livestock producing neighbors.
And all revenue is welcome now, given the status of farm income in Kansas, as depicted in the Kansas Farm Management Association numbers.
Right. So we're down to historic lows in terms of net farm income. So yes, any opportunity to increase revenue, net revenue, is one that we want to be considering. And like I said, you know, avoiding that direct investment in cattle, as opposed to trying to maybe use your land year round instead of just for your summer crops or something, that's where we've got some opportunities to help improve their revenues.
And for more backdrop, the returns to cattle production, and Dustin, you spoke to this, have been dwindling for a while, and again, sort of following the lead that the crop sector has unfortunately set here in recent months.
That's correct. So looking at the Kansas Farm Management data, you know, we had record year in terms of looking at your returns over total costs in 2014. Fast forward to 2015, we see another one of the largest losses in your total returns to your cow-calf operations. And I don't know that it's going to, as you've pointed out, I don't know that it's going to get better anytime soon. Our colleague Glenn Tonser talks about expansion could still continue to happen in the near future. Coupling that with demand starting to weaken for beef, and so that's putting downward pressure on prices.
And we see the numbers depict that. Heifer retention has been up until recently. It's plateaued a bit, but there are cattle out there. There's plenty of beef on the hoof.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think the supplies, it's still going to continue to increase in the near future, and which will put some downward pressure on prices.
You have been with us previously, Dustin, to talk about this notion of diversification of operations. Some vertical integration may be warranted in these conditions.
Well, a couple weeks ago we had some meetings with lenders throughout the state, and one of the suggestions actually come from a lender was, as a diversification strategy, was vertically integrating. So if you are a cow-calf producer, maybe you get into the feeding sector, although there are some challenges with that. You got to borrow capital to put in feed bunks, as an example. Mm-hmm. There'll be additional management skills. Now you're going from running cow-calf to learning how to feed cows. There'll be labor issues, et cetera. So there are going to be some issues if one wants to think about vertical integration.
So that might lend more to the idea of this partnership between crop producers and cattle producers as an alternative.
Absolutely, and I think that's where Michael already mentioned this strategic partnership between the crop producers and your cattle producers as a diversification strategy going forward.
Well, to add, Michael, further to the scenario here, the trends in pasture rental rates. These are standard grasslands in Kansas. Where those stand, and those probably will eventually relate to alternative grazing opportunities as well, won't they?
Sure. So, you know, over the last 10 years, we saw a lot of crazy things happening in the land markets. By the peak of the returns to cropping, you know, by 2013 and such, we had people who were looking at breaking out pasture just to be able to crop it. And then we had, you know, a fall off in the returns to crops, but we had increased competition for pasture because of the good returns to cattle. So pasture rents have been going up very steadily for the last several years. And that has also prompted us to look at some grazing alternatives or some ways of just trying to keep those costs down, because nearly three quarters of the cost of running cows is going to be in either feed costs or in pasture costs. So yeah, looking at ways to keep those costs down, trying to reduce the amount of machinery required to feed your cows. In other words, you know, it's going to be cheaper to graze them than it is to feed them hay. So how can we get them out onto pasture for a longer period of time?
So let's talk alternatives here for, in this case, winter grazing as we enter the mid-fall soon and then, of course, the winter season. The first option that comes to mind, because it's commonly used around Kansas, grazing crop residue. And Dustin, there are pluses and minuses to that.
Absolutely. Crop residue, as you point out, is one option to continue grazing cattle. Some advantages would be lower feed costs, as Michael pointed out. This allows to put on some additional weight gain. You will have reduced wear and tear of equipment, mm-hmm. facilities. And from a crop producer standpoint, that could add some additional income or revenue. However, there are some disadvantages that we tend to hear people talk about. It will remove some nutrients and organic matter, although there is some recent research coming out of Nebraska that suggests that it's very minimal impact when you do graze cattle on the stocks. You want to think about fencing, water sources, as some other options. Another commonly discussed issue is soil compaction. Talking with some agronomists and also some more recent research coming out of University of Nebraska suggests that there aren't issues with soil compaction. It's minimal impacts mm-hmm. at most.
So really it's a promising alternative here. But the question that always seems to arise, what is the going rate for crop residue on a leasing basis? And there's been further information generated on that too.
There's a little bit of information, survey information coming out of the North Central Kansas region. And they found that crop residue on average last year was about $9 an acre, but there was a pretty wide range, anywhere from $5 to $25. Nebraska and Iowa both had similar survey results as well.
Sounds like there's a fair range of negotiation between the partners involved in this then, as we talk about it in those terms.
Absolutely. And as we heard at the ranching summit last week, there's a lot of negotiation between the cattle producer and the crop producer on who's going to invest in what.
Well, in addition to using crop stover as a grazing resource, another up-and-coming alternative, cover crops. Michael, again, there are advantages and disadvantages to this prospect, right?
Sure. So we still have the same issues that we have with grazing crop residue, and that's going to come in the form of, you know, do you have hot wire? Do you have fence? Do you have a water source? Who's going to provide the labor to mm-hmm. check those cows daily? So those things don't differ too much. But on the cover crop side, what you're looking at in this situation is you're asking the crop producer to go in and, you know, plant a cover crop, incur some costs with regard to seed and machinery and labor, and even potentially some fertilizer costs, and then to try to figure out whether or not you can essentially pay that producer enough to cover those costs and let them still make some money off of it. Cover crops, they were introduced, and some folks have been using them for a very long time in a very informal way, but, you know, they were introduced as a soil and water quality improvement or conservation type practice. But we realized that if you were in an area that can grow a sufficient amount of biomass, which is eastern Kansas, okay, this isn't going to be viable in western Kansas. You're not going to have enough water to grow those cover crops in order to also be able to graze them. Mm-hmm. But if you've got the moisture and you can do it, it gives us potentially dual use, right? You can have that conservation aspect to it, and then you can also feed livestock in the winter.
Now, we need to take a quick break. We'd like to continue on this theme, for a recent budget was run by K-State on the costs and returns to grazing cattle on cover crops, particularly the cow-calf herd, as we're talking of today. In addition, we'll get into the economic viability of winter wheat grazing for the cow-calf herd, and a look at the possibility of utilizing former Conservation Reserve Program grass as a grazing resource alternative as well. If the both of you would stand by, we'll get to all of that directly here in a few moments. Our guests, Michael Taylor and Dustin Pendle, K-State agricultural economists, as we're looking at grazing alternatives that cow-calf operators might consider in partnership with crop producers.